Episode 19 of By Our Own Hands. That night, the men of the community met in the same room normally reserved for the clandestine masses. Father O'Keefe wore a veil over his face. It was an old tradition among outlawed priests so that a Roman Catholic layperson could swear honestly to the authorities that he had not seen a priest. When the last of the men had arrived, Father O'Keefe began to speak. Each of us has a duty and each of us has a calling. God has a plan for each and every one of you. We all have a duty to resist, but our callings vary. Some of us have a calling to persevere, and some of us have a calling to fight. Still others have a calling to martyrdom. That which is the most difficult to embrace is that which you are called to do. You must answer your call. That too is your duty. We must resist evil. The source of the evil we must resist is not another's faith. Faith is holy. The source of the evil that torments us is something entirely unholy. Some of the men looked down while others looked away. Most had cursed their Protestant neighbors and their faiths on more than one occasion. Rory had done so too. He looked away. Father O'Keefe's voice filled the room again. We have been offered leases by Mr. Oliver. Some of our German neighbors have let it be known that they desire these lands. Mr. Oliver would like to keep us on these lands, but he needs for us to be tenants. He cannot justify refusing these Germans unless he can honestly say that the land is already leased by others. Some of you may wonder who needs to be satisfied. To whom must Mr. Oliver justify his actions? Father O'Keefe looked about the room and motioned towards the men in the room. If I had called this meeting a century ago, this room would not have been so crowded. The devil's disciple massacred and starved our people then, but through the grace of God, we have rebounded. Our community has swelled, and so have those communities that are not far from us. As they have grown, they have come closer to us. So too have the authorities that do England's bidding. They are not far away. There was a murmur throughout the room. Silence, he shouted before lowering his voice and continuing. Mr. Oliver will have to answer for us if the authorities ever find our glen. He can no longer claim that he is unaware of our existence. Many of you are outlaws. I am an outlaw too. We are no longer hidden. We must become tenants. If we have leases, we cannot be removed from these lands unless we fail to pay our rents. We must protect ourselves. We must not lose this glen, he concluded, his voice dropping to little more than a whisper. We will accept the leases, Father, William shouted. Yes, we will. We will not lose this land, Rory added. Soon the men in the room were shouting their agreements. Father O'Keefe looked about with relief and clasped his hands together. He looked upwards towards the heavens. Thank you, Lord, he said. Rory returned to his cottage. Neve had waited for him, as all the women in the glen had done for their husbands, fathers, and sons. He did not meet her eyes. He knew that she would be angry. He knew before he began to speak. Mr. Oliver sent his land agent to offer us leases, he began. We do not need leases. We have never needed them before, she protested. Yes, Neve, we do need leases, he said. Is that what Father O'Keefe has said? She asked. Yes, he says that we must have leases to protect ourselves. Others desire our land, he said. Are the others Germans? She asked. She almost spat the word Germans. Rory looked at her and began to feel the same hostility he had felt when he had seen the young man eyeing his glen. He deeply resented the Germans. The thought of them taking his land filled him with rage. He took a deep breath and reminded himself that the leases would prevent this. "Yes, Germans have taken an interest in our lands," Rory said. "Only they have taken an interest. In all the years our people have lived here, no one else has taken an interest," she said, lowering her voice. She stepped closer to Rory. "We have lived in Oisin's Glen with freedom for a century. We can continue to do so, but only if we remain hidden," she said. "We cannot remain hidden," he said. "Yes, we can, but only if we refuse the leases. The leases will leave us exposed. We will be in bondage to a landlord. We will no longer be hidden. We will no longer be free," she said. Rory looked away from her. "I have to leave in a week's time and meet the land agent to accept the leases," he said. "You and William?" she asked accusingly, glaring at him. "No, I will see to it for William. He and Father O'Keefe have entrusted me with the task," he said. "In a week's time, you will leave to carry out the task. Instead of visiting the land agent, you will visit that young German that has been seen on our land. You will frighten him. You will frighten him and all of his people from ever again laying eyes on our land," she said. Rory was silent. "You will tell everyone that you were refused the leases. The agent will not return because the Germans will be too frightened to lease this land. We will continue on as we have for a century," she continued. "How do you suppose I frighten all of them?" he asked. "You will do what you must. This is our land, church and sanctuary. We cannot be beholden to a landlord. We must remain free," she said. Rory thought of the young man. "Do what you must," she repeated, before walking away from him. Rory knew that he should keep his word to William and Father O'Keefe, but he also knew at that moment that he would struggle to do so. Neve's words had echoed the sentiments in his heart. Rory spent the next week writing down the remainder of his tales, his father's tales, the tales of his exiled ancestors. He wrote of life and death, freedom and slavery. Neve's words echoed in his mind. "We must remain free." He was determined to do so. The night before he was expected to meet the land agent, he dreamt of a great fire. He stood in his cottage surrounded by flames. He frantically looked about for an escape, but found none. A voice spoke to him. It was the voice of a woman. "A curse is upon us." He woke from his dream. He heard the voice again. "Life is life and death is death. Do not mistake one for the other. If you do, life will be death and death will be all." He looked about him, but only he and Neve were in his room. She was fast asleep. He walked to the cottage door and opened it. The rain fell heavily. He stepped out of his cottage and let the rain fall on his face. It was dawn and the daylight was still largely hidden by the shadows of night. He saw a movement near the side of the cottage. He rushed towards the side of the cottage. He expected to see the young man. Instead, he saw the figure of a woman running away. She wore a dark cloak. She disappeared into the shadows. He returned to his cottage and waited for the sun to fully rise. Once he left his cottage, he started on the path that led to Mr. Oliver's castle. He felt the weight of his responsibility. He knew that he had given his word to Father O'Keefe and the entire community. They had placed their trust in him. But with each step he took, he found himself drawn to the path that led to the new German farms. He wanted to frighten the young man. He wanted to frighten all of them. He reached Ballyorgan and was soon at the bend in the road where the path could be reached. He looked down the length of the path. He turned and continued on towards Castle Oliver. He walked on and walked on. He was too unsure of himself to look back. He knew if he did, he could not continue on to the castle. Then Neve's words echoed in his mind. We must remain free. He stopped and turned around. He began walking away from the castle and towards the path that led to the Germans. He knew that he was breaking his word and that his treachery would be revealed, but he could not stop himself. He did not stop walking until he reached the path. He stood at the path and looked as far as he could down the length of the path. He began to slowly walk the path. The rain began to fall again. He could see smoke from a fire in the distance. The new farms were not near the main road. He would have to walk some distance. He continued to walk down the path. He suddenly heard a sound. He turned and saw that the young man was behind him. He must have been on the main road. He had followed him. Rory walked towards the young man. The young man glared at him. "Why are you here?" he asked. Rory reached him and stood as close to him as he could. He whispered in the young man's face, "I have seen you on my land. You wish to claim what is mine. You have challenged me. I have come to answer your challenge," Rory said. The young man looked directly into Rory's eyes. "I only seek what you seek," he said. Rory returned his stare. He thought of Neve. He thought of his land. Father O'Keefe had assured them all that the leases would prevent the theft of their land. It would remain in their hands as long as they had leases. Rory stepped back and away from the young man. He started to walk down the path in a direction that led back to the road. Once again, he heard Neve's voice. Her words echoed in his mind. "The leases will leave us in bondage to a landlord. We will no longer be free. We must remain free." He knew that this bondage was the only way to prevent the loss of their land. Or was it? Her words continued to haunt him. "We cannot be beholden to a landlord. We must remain free." Rory turned around and saw that the young man had not moved. He was watching Rory. Neve's voice returned to him again. "You will do what you must." Rory began to walk towards the young man. Rory walked quickly. When he had almost reached the young man, he bent down and grabbed a rock from the path. He rushed at the young man and hit him over the head with the rock. The young man moaned and fell to the ground. He continued hitting him. The young man finally became silent and still. Rory threw the stone aside. He looked at his shirt. It was stained with the blood of the young man. He stared at his still and lifeless body. Finally, Rory let out a loud and anguished cry. The rain continued to fall. Rory returned to the road. He walked towards his home. He passed some villagers in Ballyorgan. They stared at him without speaking. He could see from the clothes of those he passed that they were Irish and German alike. He finally reached his home. He found Father O'Keefe waiting for him in his cottage. He knew that Father O'Keefe was waiting for the leases. Father O'Keefe saw the shame in Rory's face and the blood on his clothes. He shook his fist at Rory and shouted, "What have you done?" Rory looked away and did not meet Father O'Keefe's eyes as he answered him, "I have killed one of them." "One of them?" Father O'Keefe asked. I have killed one of the Germans. Father O'Keefe inhaled deeply before responding. You have committed a grave and terrible sin. Father O'Keefe glared at Rory and then walked to him. He cupped Rory's face in his hands and whispered to him, "They only seek what we seek." Rory felt the truth of Father O'Keefe's words rain down on him like stones. They were the words of the young man, too. He finally met Father O'Keefe's eyes. They were deep wells of sadness. Pray for your soul. Pray for all of us. Your actions may have condemned us. Pray that we are not all forsaken, he said. He left the cottage. Rory stood motionless. He saw Neve approach him. She did not speak. She tried to reach for him. He turned away from her. I took a man's life to preserve our freedom, but our freedom has been nothing more than an illusion, Rory said. That is not true, Neve whispered. It is true, and now I have condemned us all, he said. The next day, the sheriff arrived. He came for Rory, but he also came for Father O'Keefe. Rory was a murderer, but Father O'Keefe was a priest. The capture of a murderer was awarded with praise. The capture of an outlawed priest was awarded with a purse. A seminarian was only good for £5, but a priest was good for £20. The ultimate prize was a bishop. The reward was £100. The sheriff believed that a bishop was hiding in the glen. He was eager to claim his prize. Rory hid in the priest room with Father O'Keefe. They listened as William spoke to the sheriff. Sheriff, we have been on these lands for years, William said. I cannot prove or disprove your claim because you and your people are nothing more than squatters. You have no legal claim to this land, he said. William was silent. They had never leased the land. They had no legal claim. The sheriff was correct. Sheriff, we are a small community. We only wish, William began before the sheriff interrupted him. You are a small community that is hiding outlaws. Now you are hiding a murderer, too. You must remove yourselves immediately. I will have men arriving within the hour. We will remove every last one of you today, and anyone that refuses to leave will be taken into custody, he said. He walked away from William and called over his shoulder. My men will be arriving soon. We will be watching for your priest. He turned around. Is it true that he is a bishop? He asked. He turned and continued walking away from the Egan cottage. I certainly hope so, he shouted. William closed the door. The murder of the young man had brought the law. The law could now search for their priest without the permission of Mr. Oliver. Their lack of leases allowed the law to clear them from the land. They had no legal claim to the land. Rory was devastated. In one brutal act, he had doomed his community and had set a pack of dogs after Father O'Keefe. He sat motionless next to Father O'Keefe. Father O'Keefe placed his hand over Rory's. I forgive you. Save yourself. Leave here before the sheriff's men arrive, he said. Rory left their small space and descended the ladder. He entered the main room. William looked at him with tears in his eyes. Will you look after Neve? Rory asked. Of course I will. You have little to fear. The authorities are searching for Father O'Keefe. You have simply given them an excuse to search every nook and cranny, he said. Father O'Keefe descended the ladder. He entered the room. The men fell silent. Finally, William spoke. I will prepare a bag for your journey, he said. There is no time for that, Father O'Keefe said. As soon as he said so, the sound of shouting could be heard from outside the cottage. All three men looked with terror at the front door. "You need to leave now. Use the back door. Cross to the hedge teacher's cottage. Behind his cottage are several small trees. You can hide yourself among them. They stretch all the way to the path that leads to Sioux Fin. Take that path. Most of our outlaws will be taking a path that leads to Long Mountain. The authorities will assume that you are among them," Williams said. Father O'Keefe carefully left through the back door of the cottage. Rory watched him leave. He saw him cross the road. He heard the shouts of men and a barking of dogs. He glanced at the heavens and said a silent prayer to himself. He then left through the back door. He looked in the direction of Father O'Keefe. He saw him nearing the back of the hedge teacher's cottage. Rory looked about and crossed the road. He soon reached the hedge teacher's cottage, too. He turned around. He saw one of the sheriff's men pulling William out of his cottage. Many others had already been forced out of their cottages. He heard wailing. He saw Neve outside of their cottage. She was wailing, too. He watched as more and more of his neighbors were forcibly torn from their homes. Then he felt eyes on him. He turned his gaze to William's cottage and saw the sheriff staring at him. He turned around and ran to the back of the hedge teacher's cottage. He looked around and saw that the sheriff was following him. Rory began to run as quickly as he could. He ran through the trees. Their branches tore at his face and his clothes. He saw a thick stick of wood that had been cut for firewood and then discarded. It resembled a club. He picked it up. He continued to run. He reached the path to the summit of Sioux Fin. His lungs burned. Rain began to fall again. He felt the cold rain seep into his clothes. He continued to run. He repeatedly turned around and looked for the sheriff. He saw that the sheriff was not far behind him, and he was not alone. He had two other men that had joined him. Rory continued to run towards the summit. After several minutes of running, Rory finally saw Father O'Keefe ahead of him. Father O'Keefe was heading towards the stone cairn at the summit. Rory knew what he must do. He felt the stick in his hand. He squeezed it tightly. He followed Father O'Keefe, who did not turn around. He saw him reach the stone cairn and walk to the back of the cairn. Rory reached the stone cairn. He walked around it and saw Father O'Keefe waiting with his eyes closed. "It is I, Rory, not one of your tormentors," Rory said. Father O'Keefe opened his eyes. "Forgive me, Father," Rory said as he raised the stick and hit Father O'Keefe over the head. Father O'Keefe moaned. Rory was certain that he had stunned him and he had not killed him. He still listened for his breath to be absolutely certain. Rory quickly disrobed. He then removed Father O'Keefe's cassock. He pulled on the cassock and quickly dressed Father O'Keefe in his own clothes. He reached into the pocket of the cassock and pulled out a small one-decade rosary, one decade so that it could be easily concealed. They all owned such rosaries ever since the laws had been passed that condemned their faith. He placed the rosary into one of Father O'Keefe's hands. He heard a faint moan from Father O'Keefe, and then he heard the shouts of the approaching men. He grabbed the stick and ran out from behind the cairn. He brandished the stick in the air. "I will kill all of you," he shouted repeatedly while running towards the men. He saw the sheriff's eyes widen. "Stop," he shouted. "To hell with all of you," Rory shouted as he continued to run towards them. He had almost reached them when the men opened fire. Rory immediately fell to the ground. He felt his blood seep out of him and soak Father O'Keefe's cassock. He saw the sky, and then all became shadows, followed by darkness. He heard a voice before he took his last breath. It was the voice of the old woman. "Fire, son of fire, it was your calling to fight. You did not fight your enemy and punish the wicked. You brought the fight to those who were called to persevere. You slaughtered an innocent. You did not answer your call, but instead you stole the call of another. You have failed, and another must overcome the flames." Father O'Keefe did not regain consciousness until after the men had left the mountain. He remained on the mountain for 2 days before he descended in search of food. He returned to the Glenisheen cottages and found them deserted. He looked about for any life and found that all had been driven away. Most had not even had time to pack their belongings. Father O'Keefe visited each cottage. When he visited the last one, the Egan's cottage, he saw an old woman seated near the hearth. A fire burned. She turned to him. "They have all left. Travel south and east to the Oak Forest Church. 'Tis there you'll find them. Seek Neve, for she carries within her Rory's child. Write down his tale and take all of his tales to her," she said, motioning to a stack of paper on the table. Father O'Keefe sat down and began to write Rory's tale. He looked up after a few minutes and saw that the old woman had vanished. He returned to his task and did not rest until he had finished. He then carried the tales to Neve.